We are on a series. If you're visiting, this is you're kind of being plopped into this series. If you've been here for a while, in and out, you'll know that we're on this series on David, using the life of David sort of as a filter to look at our own lives and to see what we've been called to do and who we have been called to become as individuals and as a group together, as a church community together. And so we're going to continue on this morning in that same vein. One quote that's been super helpful in this endeavor of looking at David's life is this quote from Frederick Buechner, who says, "The place God calls you is the place where your deepest gladness and the world's deepest hunger meet. That place, that intersection, that overlap, that is likely where your vocation is. That is where the sweet spot for your life is where your deepest gladness, your passion, your vision, what makes you excited, where that overlays or overlaps with the world around you and its greatest need. Like, what is in our society, in your life, who are out there who there's need, there's hunger, there's stuff to do, there's problems out there. And so where those things overlap is where your vocation is. Today we're going to talk about a few barriers to finding your deepest gladness. That's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about a few barriers about how to do that, like what keeps us from finding our vision, our vocation, our truest selves, and not living into someone else's gladness or not living out of someone else's deepest gladness. Your deepest gladness is what you're supposed to live out of and where we're supposed to and what God has given us to live out of. And so I just gave away one of the barriers to finding our gladness. But so many of us live imitation lives. Living out of someone else's gladness is kind of like living a cheap knockoff life. We talked about Nepal. So there's one Western shop in Nepal. And if you can imagine what it might be, it's a mountaineering country. And so it's North Face, eh, Sherry? We walked right by it the last year we were there. And there's this North Face shop, and in there you can buy genuine North Face gear. But Rod, as you know, you can walk around the corner, and you can buy all kinds of other North Face gear for like a quarter, an eighth of the price, like really, really cheap. And you can look at it, and you can feel it. Hey, Karina, you've done this. You probably have a North Face backpack in your, yeah, you do. You can look at it, and it's like it looks exactly the same. You go into the North Face store, and you have theirs, and you can have another backpack. It looks exactly the same. The stitching, you can look, same stitching. The logo, it's all the same. Everything's the same. You feel it. Feels like the same material. Feels like it. You can smell it even. Smells like the factory, you know. You know that nice, like, new factory backpack smell? You ever do that? Am I the only one? Me and Amanda are the only ones that smell backpacks? Maybe that's okay. But there's a big difference. And it's not just the price, right? Which one's going to last? The real deal will last a heck of a lot longer than the cheap, fake, imitation knockoff. And the same is true about our lives. Not that we're going to like get knocked off or something, but if we're living out of someone else's gladness, it's like we're living an imitation life. We'll be able to do it for some time, but eventually we'll run out of gas. Eventually the threads will start wearing thin where they're not supposed to wear thin. We'll be like we're living those cheap imitation North Face backpacks that you can get. And by the way, there's all kinds of different grades. They joke about it. Like, do you want like the real one, or do you want like the Indonesian one, which is a certain grade? And then do you want like they go through a bunch of different countries, and finally there's like the real cheapest one. And so you can go and you can buy all kinds of different grades of the exact same backpack, it seems. But they're not the exact same thing. And living someone else's life is like that. It's going to show. It's going to wear thin after a while. Some imitations you can tell right away, like this one. This one, we bought these when we lived in the Philippines. Look at this one. Can you spot the difference? Can you see? Can you see what it is? Let me tell you, we bought it just had to buy it because, well, you just have to when you're doing something like that. And let me tell you, as soon as you put that toothpaste in your mouth, you can tell the difference. It is not Crest. It is Crust toothpaste. Some imitations you can tell right away, like this Crest toothpaste. It looked and tasted very different. But where we're not living the lives God has for us, sometimes you can tell right away. Sometimes it takes a while for it to wear thin. But it will wear thin. The imitation will show through in one way, shape, or form in our lives. So this morning, we're going to look at David, and David's going to model the way for us in a very particular story, which you'll all be familiar with by now, the story of David and Goliath in 1 Samuel chapter 17. So you can turn there if you have a Bible. This is the appropriate time to open your phones in church, by the way. It's the only appropriate time to open your phones in church, by the way. Can I say that? Can I be as bold as to say that? Like, let's just do away with Facebook. I know, I saw some people checking their Facebook and maybe other things. Oh, maybe you were reading the Bible. That's okay, too. Anyways, just a suggestion. If you come to church and you're, like, on your phone talking to someone else, like, what's the point, right? For real, like, what's the point? So anyways, so that aside, you can open your phones. It's totally fine right now to open your phones, take notes if you want, and 1 Samuel chapter 17. And David's going to model the way of living the real thing, living the life he was called to live. And he's going to model for us how to live the lives that we are called to live, finding our deepest gladness. What are we here for? Why on earth are you here? It's a good question to ask. And to continue asking throughout our lives. Who was David and what does his example say to us? What kind of people has God created us to be? Why on earth are we here? So 1 Samuel chapter 17. And I'm going to start just a little bit before these particular verses. I'm going to start reading in verse 32. You'll know the story. It's about David and Goliath. Goliath was this giant of a man, almost 9 feet tall, and he had been mocking the nation of Israel, the armies of Israel from one side of the valley, and they were over there cowering. And David, the little shepherd boy, comes onto the scene. Verse 32, I'm going to start reading. "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. Who is Saul? King Saul, right? He was the king of the Hebrew people at that time. "Don't worry about this Philistine," David told Saul. "I'll go fight him." "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth." But David persisted. "I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats," he said. "When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death." Just picture that for a second. Maybe not too graphically. "I have done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too. For he defied the armies of the living God. The Lord, who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear, will rescue me from this Philistine." This is where we're going to pick up. And Saul finally consented. What does that tell you about their conversation? Saul finally consented. Maybe there was a bit more going on than what's recorded. David was persistent somehow. So Saul finally consented. "All right," he said. "Go ahead," he said. "And may the Lord be with you." Then, verse 38, Saul gave David his own armor. Maybe that's a bad translation. Saul gave David Saul's armor, just to be very clear about that. Then Saul gave David his own armor, a bronze helmet and a coat of mail. David put it on. Just picture this for a second in your mind. Young 15-year-old shepherd guy. He's got his staff there. He had just come from taking care of the sheep, eh? He's bringing snacks to his brothers who were the real warriors here. That he was just on an errand to bring some snacks. So picture that. Like, what would that look like? What kind of kid would he be? I mean, he was big enough and strapping enough to be able to take out some lions and bears. So he wasn't a weakling, but he wasn't this tall, magnificent warrior like Saul was. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. What's going on in his mind here? What's he thinking? I can't go in these, he protested to Saul. I'm not used to them. So David took them off again. He picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them into his shepherd's bag. Then, armed with only his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Father, would you help us now? Holy Spirit, would you come? And would you quicken the truths of this story to our hearts now? I pray, Lord, that you would challenge us and encourage us. In the name of Jesus, amen. So, there's a few things that I want to look at and pull out from this story. The first thing is Saul's armor, verse 38. Where Saul says, here, David, here's my own armor. Here's this helmet of bronze. This big helmet of bronze and this coat of mail, which is like chain-linked kind of things. I have a friend actually has coat of mail. I was sitting in my office this morning thinking, oh, I should have brought this coat of mail. But it's quite heavy. It's like this, he's made it, it's all the kind of little rings. I don't know exactly what kind of coats of mail like in that era they would have had, but they had some. And anyways, so David gets this. He gets outfitted in these big, huge things that were meant, like Saul was a tall guy. He was head and shoulders above everyone else, the Bible says. And a big strapping warrior. He was like an archetype of a warrior. Like he was, when people thought warrior or soldier, they thought Saul. That was the kind of thing. So his big outfit, big gear. And he gives it to David, who wasn't that at all. Saul tries to make David look and act like a soldier. Because that's the only way that you're going to really defeat this Goliath, is on the same terms, on the battlefield, right? And so he's outfitting him. And Saul is kind of bringing his presuppositions, his ideas of how this is going to play out. Well, it's a battle, and so you're going to need the tools of a battle. So here's the tools. And these tools were something else, this bronze helmet and this mail, coat of mail and a sword. There was only a few, I think it's 1 Samuel 13, something like that. It says there was only 2 swords in the whole Israelite army. Only 2 swords, Jonathan and Saul. So this was one of two. This wasn't like standard issue. I mean, that says something about where their trust was. It also said something to their enemies. Oh, these guys aren't very well outfitted. Let's go and, you know, take them over, hey? Like, imagine an army without hardly any weapons. It's kind of interesting to think about. The problem is that David wasn't a soldier at this point. He was not a soldier. He was a shepherd. He was just delivering some snacks, for goodness sake. Taking a break from tending the sheep. He didn't fit the gear. He didn't fit the clothing. He didn't fit the attitude. They simply weren't who he was. And yet here Saul gives them these things. And this armor, these were like the high-tech military gear of his time. It's like this. I literally searched high-tech military armor, okay? If you go ahead and Google that. That's okay. I give you permission to Google right now if you need to. But this is one of the things that will come up, the USS Zumwalt. This is a brand new, like 20-something billion dollar stealth destroyer. It was just commissioned last week, actually, for the U.S. Navy. And so this would have been something like, here, David, have one of these. Or this is what else will come up on if you Google. Killer micro drones, kind of the exact opposite. Like whole tons of research and development is going, sorry, guys, this TV isn't working. We're going to get that fixed. But you can stand. It's totally fine. But so much research and development is going into these tiny little micro drones where they can, you know, you can do a video game thing and the soldiers can kind of go up and drop little grenades sort of, you know, well out of arm's reach. This is sort of what was happening. Saul is giving David not killer micro drones, but it's the highest high-tech gear that he had. And incidentally, Goliath had the same kind of gear. It was not normal. The armies were not normally outfitted with all this stuff. So he was like, okay, this is a really important job. You've got to win. So you've got to go on their terms. And so here, I'm going to give you the best of the best, like the most high-tech, coolest, biggest sword that we've got. One out of two. And the best helmet. And here's the best chain mail. Saul offered David this high-tech gadgetry. Because he wouldn't have gone into battle without it. Because it had served him well in the past. It would have been an honor, actually. Can you imagine the king offering you his gear? This would have been quite an honor, you know, to be outfitted in this. All this high-tech gadgetry. Yet, it didn't fit. It would have been like this. you ever seen a 2 or 3 year old wander around a house and they wander into the front room and ooh, there's daddy's shoes, you know? You know, you've seen that picture? Maybe you've experienced that, maybe you've done that yourself when you were 2 or 3, wandering around the house. It's so cute, isn't it? It's really adorable, but it's highly ineffective as far as wearing footwear. And that was kind of the thing for David in this scenario. He wasn't having fun necessarily, nor was he cute, but the effect kind of would have been the same. It just didn't fit. It was ineffective. It wasn't right. He knew this about himself. He knew this about himself. Even though it was an honor for him to have it. And we don't know why Saul exactly gave it. We can infer some things. Maybe he was like, here, get it. Just like, go. And he knew that David was the anointed king. He was already anointed at this point. So maybe it was Saul's kind of like, here, give him to the birds. Like, let's get rid of this anointed king. We don't really know. But David knew that they didn't fit. I mean, it was obvious, but he knew that this was not who he was. There was something wrong here. Some may trust in horses, like we sang this morning. Some may trust in chariots. Some may trust in chainmail. Some may trust in helmets and swords. But I'm going to trust in the name of the Lord. Because I know who I am. I know who I'm created to be. That's David, right? In the end, Saul died by the sword and his armor was hung actually in a Philistine temple, as if to say, don't trust in this armor. That's where it's going to lead you. Don't trust in that armor. What are the things in your life that you shouldn't be trusting in? Do you have some pieces of armor that maybe have been given you that don't quite fit properly? They can be all kinds of different things, can't they? Maybe experience, training, education, trusting too much in natural talents or degrees, money, contacts or contracts. These things aren't necessarily bad, but when we trust in them at the expense of trusting in God, they just don't fit and they become problematic. Doesn't fit. So Saul may have thought David's action was disrespectful, or reckless even maybe, letting him down in some way. Yet David knows who he was. He embraced who he was. He knew himself. A couple years ago when we moved into our house that we currently are in, College and Par, it needed some work. It needed some painting. And so we had painted before. We like bright colors and we just kind of sort of slapped stuff together. And we thought, let's not do it this time. Let's go down to the local shop. And they put us in touch with this interior designer. And we're like, okay. And she's going to help us kind of pick out the right colors for us, right? And so we go down and she says, come back, bring some of your favorite stuff, she says. Just bring some of your favorite things. And we're like, oh, okay. And so we brought down some dishcloths, actually. For real. but they were really, we loved the colors of the dishcloths. We brought down a few of some of our favorite things. And she came over to our house, and we laid them out on the table, and she goes, well, this wall could be this color and this color. And then she kind of made this whole beautiful palette of really lovely colors that work together and fit. And so we painted them up, and we were like, this is us. Like, this fits. Like, this is us. And so many times people come to our house, and they go, oh, this, like, it feels like you guys. Like, it really feels like you guys. And this is the kind of thing that David was kind of showing for us, is that it really fits. Saul's armor highlighted the fact that it isn't who David was. And so David, here at this point, he had a choice. I can't go in these, he protested to Saul. I'm not used to them. So David took them off again. Have you ever been in a situation where you're like, I know this isn't going to work. You're talking to yourself. I know this is not going to work out. And yet, you kind of go through with it, and then what happens? It doesn't work out. Right? I had an experience like this with my father-in-law once, actually. God rest his soul. He's passed on. But this is right before we were married, and we wanted to cook some, what was it back? It was like a big roast, big, huge roast, and we wanted to cook it in the ground because I had learned how to do that, you know, and from some Polynesian people. And there's certain ways that you cook roast in the ground and other ways that you don't. And when you combine those two ways, i.e. you can read between the lines. So when I had my Polynesian kind of experience, and then my father-in-law had his sort of ideas, and we tried to combine them together, and the whole time I'm thinking, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. I know, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to work, but we tried to make it happen. And sure enough, 5 hours later, 6 hours, whatever it was, and that we had a whole kind of, we'd invited a bunch of people over, and like we're ready to dig out this great roast, and we were talking about it, and I'm sweating in my britches, thinking, that sounds like a Texan thing to say, isn't it? Sweating in my britches, I was chafing my chaff. Anyways, and we pull the thing out, and it's like just like this little browned piece around, and then everything else was completely raw on the inside, sort of warmed over, right? It just didn't work. Have you had experiences like that where you're like, this isn't going to work? Can imagine David thinking to himself, standing there in this armor, this isn't going to work, this isn't going to work. Well, he spoke up, and he said, this isn't going to work. Why? Because I know myself. I know who I am, and I know who I'm not. And I'm going to live into who I am, not who I'm not. I'm not going to live in imitation here. I can't go on in these. And so there's this acceptance of who he is. Not only did he know himself, but he embraced it. You know, it's one thing to know yourself. It's another thing to accept it and to actually sort of live like it actually matters. There's a big difference there. David accepted this. He accepted his limitations in the eyes of some, it would have been. So I'm not used to these. And this wasn't like sort of the, I don't want to do this. That's not like the kid, you know, who's like refusing to eat their broccoli. That's not the, I don't want to do this that he was doing. I don't like them because I've never tried them before. He hadn't tried these before. But it's much more of a value statement. This is not who I am. It's not me. They don't fit. Stunning decision. But he chooses to be true to himself, true to where God had him at this point in his life. He wasn't a soldier. Not yet, anyways. He ended up becoming one. But at this point, he was not. He knew who he was, and he embraced himself and accepted himself for who and where he was in that moment in time. This is not the kind of accept yourself as like, it's okay, like sort of an acceptance of sin within yourself. This is an acceptance of who you are at your core. You are a child of God, loved and beloved. That's who you are. That's who we are. So, are you wearing someone else's armor? Trying to waddle through, trying to make the steak work, trying to make the roast, and you know, it's just not working. Gotta dig that thing up, chop it up, and slap it on the barbecue, which is what we ended up doing. And it worked out okay. Are you living someone else's life? See God do amazing things through someone else and then try to copy it without really making it our own? Or kind of looking at someone else and going, oh man, they are so funny. And then trying out their jokes. You ever done that? Okay, confession time, I've done that. And then the jokes just kind of flop because it's not coming from who you are. It's their jokes. It works best when they say them. You get what I'm talking about? I see a lot of knowing, oh, yeah, I've done that. The thing is, we make second-rate versions of other people when we try to be other people, when we compare ourselves. Compare gifts, when we spend more time looking at others' strengths or gifts, talents, etc. Obsessing over others' gifts, strengths, etc. Wishing we had others' gifts, strengths. Wishing we had another person's life. As if we're saying, God, you made a mistake when you made me. I don't think you quite knew what you were doing here. But David models a different way. He accepts where he was at that time in his life. Becky and I just went to this show, this book. Anybody ever read this book? My name is Asher Lev. It's an awesome book, eh? Yeah. It's playing at the MTC Warehouse Theater. It's a show, but it's about this artist. It's fiction. Really, I highly recommend it. By Chaim Potok is the guy's name. But it's about this young Hasidic Jew. Hasidics are like the super conservative. They live in Brooklyn mostly, lots, or this book is in Brooklyn anyways. And just very, very conservative Jew and religious, very religious. And this young boy is an artist. And it's the struggle of him coming to an acceptance of who God had made him to be. This gift, he had a gift. He was an amazing, talented artist, and of him trying to reconcile his gift with his community which was not welcoming of that gift and how it was expressed. His mother kept wanting him to paint pretty calendar postcards for the world, you know. And that was not what was in him. He wanted to paint life as he really saw it. And of course, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but he copies the masters at first. He begins to copy, and there's something good about that, about learning the art, learning the skill, learning how to do it. But if you stay there, and if he stayed just copying the masters of the art world for him, or if we just stay copying the others around us who we think are masters around us, it's going to end up being really lifeless in the end. And we won't be living out of our deepest gladness. We'll be living out of someone else's deepest gladness, or what others think we should be living out of. What they say, or what those impositions that they put on us. Does that make sense? You following? And so the story of Asher is a great one of learning how to embrace this. In a similar way, though, David gave it a try at first. He gave the armor a try, didn't he? He put it on. He put it on. He gave it a go. That's a good thing. Good on him. He gave the model. There's models for us to live into. And he gave it a go, but then he had the courage to go, this is just not who I am. So many of us are uncomfortable with who we are. Maybe we don't like who we are. Maybe we don't like who God's made us to be, or how we like what we see of ourselves. So how could others like us? I love this from Father Gregory Boyle, another great book. Great guy. You don't hold up the bar and ask anybody to measure up. You hold a mirror up and you tell people the truth. And the truth is, you are exactly what God had in mind when God made you. And then you watch people become that truth. You watch people inhabit that same truth. And sometimes we have to reach in, he goes on to say, and dismantle messages of shame and disgrace that get in the way of us living that truth. Of us being who we are. And that's how God sees us. When he sees us for who we really are. And he doesn't come to us and kind of sort of hold up his nose and, you know, to try to get close to us because we reek of something or something like that. Like, that's how we think of ourselves sometimes. Have you ever thought of yourself like that? God kind of loves me, but man, I really need to clean up this part of my life first before he's really going to love me. Before he's really going to accept me. I'm not saying go easy on sin. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm also not saying go easy on God's love, because he loves us fully and completely right now as we are. That is truth, guys. But sometimes we can't accept that. It's something wrong. Like, I can't do it. It's really true. And so our job is to hold the mirror up and go, I love that picture. Mirrors versus bars. We're to be mirror people, not bar people. You live up to this bar, and then you'll be loved. No, doesn't work that way. You are God's child, and I'm going to show it to you. Look in that mirror. And then you watch people begin to live into that truth. They begin to believe it. And sometimes it takes a long time. It's a beautiful picture. For we're loved, we are loved for who we are, not for who we should be, another guy said. That's a good one too. Okay, third point. So, know yourself. David knew himself. He knew who he was. He knew who he was not. He accepted himself. He embraced who he was in the moment at that point in time. Then he picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them in his bag. He was himself. He tried it. It didn't fit. He had his own style. David was more effective with his own weapons than in the weapons of in that period of time, the sword and the mail and the everything else. David knew who he was. He's not a Goliath. I'm not a Saul. And so I'm not going to fight like it. I'm not going to fight like them. I'll fight like who I am. Saul thinks David should be as much like Goliath as possible. That was what he was thinking, you know, like meet him on his own terms. And David couldn't do that. He could have tried, but it wouldn't have worked out so well. His five smooth stones, and he put them into his sling. And, you know, these aren't the slings that we have, like with a little fork like this, and you pull it back. They were like a long, single piece of twine or leather with a little pouch on the very end. Did I have a picture? I don't think I have a picture. No. Anyways, you have to picture it in your own mind. And then they would hold both ends together and put the little smooth stone in the end of the pouch and whirl it around, round and around and round and round, and then holding on to one end, let go of the other end, and the stone would fly. Right in the noggin. And it was actually really quite dangerous and quite deadly, as you can see in the story. But he took the tools of his trade. What he knew. He embraced who he was. He was himself. Five smooth stones. What are your five smooth stones? What is that for you? What is it for me? How do you know what your five smooth stones are? Well, that's a good question. That's why we're doing this series. How do we know? How do we know who we are? How do we discover who we are? How do we figure out what our gifts are? Normally, it takes a long time, like a lifetime of discovery, and that's why we're okay with talking like this to people that, you know, like some of us, we know. We know. We have got a good idea. Some of us, we don't know. We're like spinning. We're just in different stages, and that's okay. But we can all hone them and continue to discover ourselves and continue to figure out who we are. I remember once I was 17 when I went to Bible college, and I thought I had this very particular image of myself. So I wanted to be different. I wanted to be a little bit wacky. I was an introvert, but I wasn't okay with that, actually, and I wanted to be sort of the fun kind of, you know, life of the party kind of guy. I wasn't comfortable with myself, so I spiked my hair straight up, and I wore a unicycle. I drove a unicycle around. That's what I did. And this is what happens when an introvert isn't comfortable with himself and is trying to drum up, you know, encouragement and like, look at him. Oh, wow, he's unique and different, da-da-da-da, right? Like, it's a problematic. Not that unicycles are problematic. I still like it, actually, and I can still drive it. But know yourself. How do you find out what your smooth stones are? Know yourself. And know God. Be a student of God. Because I tell you, as you know God, you begin to know yourself. As you see him, you see yourself in a different light. The more we discover about God, the more we experience him, the more we discover who we are. And be a student of yourself, too. This is one that we often don't think about. But being a student of ourselves, knowing ourselves, who are we? Well, and the crazy thing is, the more we discover about ourselves, the more we discover about God. It works both ways. So here's a few little resources. There was the sling right there. I thought I had one. Here, this is a resource that you might want to touch base on. See, this is, have you read this one, Kristen? But you know the author, yeah, from Chains to Francis, probably. So some of this stuff you just like, this isn't like a half hour talk on a Sunday morning. But some of you really need to go and figure this out. And this is one way to do it. It's using the Enneagram as a tool, which is a personality typing thing. It was developed formed out of the Desert Fathers and has been developed over the years. And this is a great tool for that called The Road Back to You by Ian Morgan Crone and Susan Stabile. Another helpful book, you can write this one down, is The Enneagram, A Christian Perspective. I'm just saying the Enneagram because it's actually been super helpful for myself, my marriage, actually, our marriage, and figuring out how we relate to each other. And we were like missing each other for a number of times. Like Becky was like, there was a period in my life where it was like, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was kind of stalling and just couldn't figure it out. And Becky was like, well, you got to do this. And she would make all these lists for me, right? Tons of lists. It still does. It's great. But she, her personality is the kind where it's like, let's get her done. Like, let's come on, get yourself together, pull it together. Da-da. And here, this is how to do it. And I'm not that. I'm not that. And so anyways, reading through and studying some of this Enneagram theory and stuff really helped us come together. The staff team here at WCVU, we've recently done it over this last year. And it's been super helpful to figure out ourselves and figure out how we work together. So anyways, I recommend that. If you're kind of going along and in life and trying to figure out who you are, these are some helpful tools, okay? This is getting really practical here right now. I think sometimes, too, how to figure this out, how can we, and what does it mean for us? Sometimes as parents, and so I'm going to speak to parents here now, sometimes we can put our own deepest gladnesses onto our kids. And we can do it in really subtle ways. Of course we say, no, I'm not going to live through my kids. But we kind of do sometimes. And so we say stuff like, oh man, if I had the opportunities when I was your age that you have now, ... fill in the blanks. We put this stuff onto our kids. Let's not do that. Like, let's step back and help them find their own deepest gladnesses. What does that look like? Let's be on guard. Let's just be on guard for that kind of sort of, I'm struggling for the words, but like putting our vision for them onto them. Just have to be careful, that's all. When we push for what we aren't, we embrace an identity that isn't ours. It's like chasing an illusion. It's like living through that cheap North Face backpack and not the real deal, living someone else's life. And of course, we trust God through this whole process, trusting who He has made us to be. As we know ourselves, as we embrace ourselves and accept ourselves, and as we be ourselves. Can we pray? Let's stand up. I know that was a lot of talking. So, I'm just going to pray and leave a little space for God to leave a little space for God. Yeah. Hopefully He's been speaking, but leave a little space for us to hear what He may be speaking to you in particular, what His invitation to you right now might be. And He's inviting us. There is invitation there. Maybe you could pinpoint it right now. If you're like me, you probably need a little bit of space to just listen to Him now in this moment, to discern what He's already been speaking to you and drawing you to. So that's the purpose of waiting. So Lord, we come to You. And we look to You. And we welcome You. Holy Spirit, we welcome Your activity here. Thank You that You weave things together and You're always speaking. You're always drawing us. Thank You for the ways that You've been speaking to us this morning. Thinking back to the worship and the words there that were given. Through all the different interactions that we've had with each other, and through David's life. What would you say to us now? What would you say to us, Lord?